He is a patient, and patients leave, alive or dead. And yet I feel something akin to surprise, akin to fear. Oh? I do not want to lose touch, he tells me. It is funny. The only times I ever touched Mutar was when he was sleeping or at the gate between life and death, when it was necessary to move his body for him. Now he turns his head back to face the screen on his own. Maybe you can give me your number and I can WhatsApp you? I cannot think of what to say. Does Mutar exist outside these walls? Who is he? Besides a man who knows my deepest secrets. And Ayola's. He has a strangely European nose, this keeper of confidences. It is sharp and long. I wonder what his own secrets are. But then I do not even know what his hobbies are, what his shackles are, where he rested his head at night before he was carried into the hospital on a stretcher. Oh, I can give you my number and you can call any time you need to talk. I nod. I am not sure he sees the nod. His eyes are still fixed to the screen. I decide to leave. When I get to the door, I turn around. Perhaps your wife still loves you. He sighs. You cannot take back words once they've been spoken. What words? I divorce you. I divorce you. I divorce you. Sister. Ayola is lying on her bed, angling her body to show Snapchat her injury. I wait for her to finish, and she eventually pulls her shirt back down over her stitches, puts her phone to one side and grins at me. Even now she looks blameless. She is wearing cotton shorts and a white camisole, and is holding onto one of the plush bears on her bed. Will you tell me what happened? On the bedside table is an open box of candy, a get-well-soon gift. She plucks out a lollipop, unwraps it, and sticks it in her mouth, sucking on it thoughtfully. Between Tade and me? Yeah. She sucks some more. He said you broke my ring. Said you were accusing me of all sorts, and that maybe you had something to do with my ex going missing. What? What did you say? I told him he was crazy, but he said you were really jealous of me and had some sort of, latent anger that what if... She pauses for dramatic effect. What if you had gone back after we left, you know, to talk to Femi? He thinks I killed Femi? I grab Ayola's arm. Even though she is not to blame this time, how could he think I was capable of that? Weird, right? I didn't even tell him about Femi. Only Gboye. Maybe he saw it on Insta. Anyway, it's like he wanted to report you or something. So I did what I had to do. She shrugs. Or at least I tried. She grabs a bear, buries her head in it, and is quiet. And then? Then when I was on the ground, he was all like, oh my gosh, Korede was telling the truth. What did you tell him, Korede? She did this for me and ended up hurt because I betrayed her. I feel dizzy. I don't want to admit that I chose a man's welfare over hers. I don't want to confess to letting him come between us when she clearly chose me over him. I told him you were dangerous. She sighs and asks, what do you think will happen now? There will be an investigation of sorts. Will they believe his story? I don't know. It's his word against yours. Against ours, Cordy. It's his word against ours. Father, Yoruba people have a custom of naming twins Taiwo and Kehinde. Taiwo is the older twin, the one who comes out first. Kehinde, therefore, is the second-born twin. But Kehinde is also the older twin, because he says to Taiwo, go out first and test the world for me. This is certainly how Father considered his position as the second twin. And Auntie Taiwo agreed. She did everything he told her to and held an unquestioning trust in everything he did, which is how, doing what she was told unquestioningly, she found herself in the house with us the Monday before our father died, shouting at me to let go of Ayola. No! I screamed, pulling Ayola even closer to me. My father was not around, and though I knew I would pay for my obstinacy later, later was a while away. His absence now gave me courage, and the promise of his return made me determined. "Your father will hear of this," Auntie Taiwo threatened, but I couldn't have cared less. I had already begun to develop plans in my head for Ayola's and my escape. Ayola held on to me tighter, even as I promised I would not let her go. "Please," Mother moaned from one of the corners in the room. "She's too young." She should not have been flirting with her father's guest then. My mouth dropped open in disbelief. What lies had my father been telling? And why did he insist that Ayola go to meet the chief man in his home alone? I must have uttered the question out loud because Auntie Taiwo replied, "She will not be alone. I will be there," as though that were any kind of reassurance. "Ayola, it is important that you do this for your father," she said in a wheedling voice. "This business opportunity is very critical. He will buy you whatever phone you want when he gets the contract. Isn't that exciting?" "Don't make me go," Ayola cried. "You're not going anywhere," I told her. "Ayola," Auntie Taiwo coaxed, "you are not a child anymore. You have started menstruating. Many girls would be excited about this. This man will give you anything you want, anything." "Anything?" Ayola asked between sniffs. I slapped her to bring her back to her senses. But I understood. Half of her fear was because I was afraid. She did not really know what they were demanding from her. Granted, she was 14, but 14 then was younger than 14 now. This was my father's last gift to us. This arrangement he had made with another man. But he had also passed on his strength to me, and I decided he was not getting his way, not this time. Ayola was my responsibility and mine alone. I grabbed the cane from its pedestal and waved it before me. "Auntie, if you come near us, I will beat you with this cane and I will not stop until he comes home." She was about to call my bluff. She was taller than I, heavier than I, but she looked into my eyes and took a few steps backward. Emboldened, I took a swipe at her. She retreated farther. I let go of Ayola and chased Auntie Taiwo out of the house, brandishing the cane. When I returned, Ayola was shaking. "He will kill us," she sobbed. "Not if you kill him first." Truth. Dr. Atumu states that he acted in self-defense and that you can verify this. He says, and I quote, "She warned me that Ayola had killed before." "Mrs. Abebe, has your sister killed before?" "No." "What did you mean when you told him that your sister had killed before?" My interviewers were well-spoken and well-educated, but this comes as no real surprise. Tade is a talented doctor at a prestigious hospital. Ayola, a beautiful woman from a good background. The case screams high profile. My hands are resting one atop the other on my lap. I would have preferred to place them on the table, but the table is grimy. There is a faint smile on my lips because I am humoring them, and they should know that I am humoring them. But it is not enough of a smile to suggest that I find the circumstances at all humorous. My mind is clear. A man died of food poisoning on a trip with my sister. I was angry that she went with him because he was married. I believe their actions led to his death. What of her ex-boyfriend? Tade. Femi, the one who went missing. I lean forward. My eyes light up. Has he come back? Has he said something? No. I frown, lean back, and lower my eyes. If I could, I would squeeze out a tear, but I have never been able to cry on cue. So why do you think she has anything to do with that? We suspect that 100 suspicions don't make proof. She is 5'2". What the hell do you think she did with him if she hurt him? My lips are firm, my eyes disbelieving. I shake my head slightly for good measure. So you believe she may have hurt him? No. My sister is the sweetest person you'll ever meet. Have you met her? They shift uncomfortably. They have met her. They have looked into her eyes and fantasized about her. They're all the same. What do you think happened that day? All I know is that he stabbed her and that she was unarmed. He said she brought the knife with her. Why would she do that? How could she know he would attack her? The knife is missing. Nurse Chi-Chi states that she logged it in after it was removed during surgery. You would have known where it was kept. All the nurses know, and all the doctors. How long have you known Dr. Otumu?
Not very long.
Have you known him to be violent?
When I was picking my outfit, I chose a light gray skirt suit. It is a solemn, feminine, and subtle reminder that the police and I are not from the same social class.
No. So you admit that this is out of character for him?
I believe I just said I've not known him very long.
Gone. Mutar has gone home to begin his life anew. Room 313 is empty. I sit there anyway, in the spot I usually sat when Mutar was still in the realm between life and death. I picture him on the bed, and I feel an intense sense of loss, more so than the one I feel for Tade, who was also gone. They had his license revoked, and he has to spend a few months in jail for assault. It could have been much worse, but many attested to the fact that he was kind and had never displayed a whit of violence. Still, there was no denying the fact that he stabbed Ayola, and for that, society demanded that he pay. I haven't seen him since the day it happened. He was placed on suspension as soon as she accused him, so I don't know what he's thinking or feeling, but I don't much care. She was right. You have to choose a side, and my lot was cast long ago. She will always have me, and I will always have her. No one else matters. Mutar gave me his number. He wrote it on a piece of paper that I put in the pocket of my uniform. I still toy with the idea of telling Ayola that there is someone out there, free and unconstrained, who knows her secret. That at any point, the things we've done could become public record. But I don't think I will. The linen used for Mutar's bed has not been changed. I can tell. I can still smell him in the room. That freshly showered smell he sported in those days of consciousness. I close my eyes for a bit and allow my mind to wander. A short while later, I pick up the room phone and dial the number for the fourth floor. Please call Mohammed down here, room 313.
Mohammed is gone, ma.
Oh. Yes, of course. Send a CB. Number 5. 0809-743-5555. I have keyed in his number 3 times, and I have cleared the screen 3 times. The paper where his number is written is not as smooth as it once was, but I'm already beginning to forget what his voice sounds like. There is a knock on my door. Come in. The house girl opens the door a crack and sticks her head in.
Ma, mommy says I should call you. There's a guest downstairs.
Who is it?
It's a man.
I dismiss her, realizing she can't tell me more than that. She closes my door, and I stare at the slip of paper with Mutar's number on it. I light a candle on my nightstand and hold the paper over the flame until the numbers are swallowed by blackness and fire licks the tips of my fingers. There will never be another Mutar. I know this. There will never be another opportunity to confess my sins or another chance to absolve myself of the crimes of the past or the future. They disappear with the curling paper because Ayola needs me. She needs me more than I need untainted hands. When I'm done, I walk to the mirror. I'm not exactly dressed to entertain guests. I'm wearing a bubu and a turban, but whoever it is will have to take me as I am. I take the back stairs, pause before the painting. I glimpse the evanescent shadow of the woman, and for a moment it feels as though she watches me from a vantage point that I cannot see. The frame is tilting a little to the left. I correct it and move on. Our house girl scurries by me carrying a vase of roses. The go-to of the unimaginative, but I guess Ayola will be pleased. They are in the living room, my mum, Ayola, and the man.
all three of them look up at me as I approach.
This is my sister, Cordy.
The man smiles. I smile back. This is Adepero Oduye. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of My Sister the Serial Killer by Oyinkan Braithwaite. This program was directed by Simone Barros, executive producer Karen Jakonski. Text copyright 2017-2018 by Oyinkan Braithwaite. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.